In 2011, more than 23,000 juveniles were arrested in the state of Washington. Just over 1,000 of those arrests were for violent crimes like assault. That's according to Washington's Department of Social and Health Services. Now, a new study sheds light on which teens are more likely to commit more crimes. If a teen thinks he won't live long into adulthood, that makes him more likely to reoffend. Dr. Alex Baccaro is the study author. He's a criminology professor at the University of Texas at Dallas, and I spoke with him about this earlier and what it means for youth crime rates and what the lessons are for policymakers.
Some kids thought they would live to be 21. Some kids thought they would live to be 40. Some kids thought they would live to be 90. Other kids thought they would live only a couple more years till they're 18 years old. And so our interest was, given that information, does that somehow predict their long-term offending patterns? And lo and behold, what we found was that the kids who envisioned a very short future, in other words, they thought they were only going to live a few more years, they offended for a longer period of time in our 7-year follow-up study and offended at a much higher rate. And then when we further probed that, what we found was that the kids who believed that they were not going to live a very long time, they were more likely to neglect long-term consequences and then believe in the here and the now. Because they couldn't even envision a future, they weren't caring about the long-term consequences of their actions because they were living right here, right now.
And you studied them over a 7-year time period. What happened to them over that time?
Sure. Some subset of those youth went to prison. Some subset of those youth were on probation. Some were diverted. And some subset died. And so we were trying to understand the variety of different kinds of experience these kids had. And those experiences could be related to criminal justice contact, health contact, jobs, employment, education, so on and so forth. We're really interested in the totality of these kids' lives.
I mean, you're talking about something really super huge, potentially completely transforming kids' lives so that they can envision a better future for themselves or they can envision alternatives for themselves. I mean, how does society get at something that huge?
Absolutely. That, you know, it's the devil is always in the details, and the solutions are never easy. But what we do know is that if you can address these kinds of things, you will have benefits in other domains of these kids' lives. So it's not just going to be less crime. It's going to be less drug use. It's going to be better education outcomes. It's going to be better social skills training. All of that turns into better employment, better relationships over life, better health patterns over life. And again, it's not just about crime. People have to understand that it's about everything else, and crime is just one manifestation of these kids' lives. And I think everybody would agree that we want productive citizens. Productive citizens are educated. They have good jobs. They have good social skills. They treat people very fairly and honestly. And so these kinds of things are all part and parcel of how we deal with positive youth development.
I'm wondering, you know, these kids are actually a part of a system. They're caught up in the system. They're being processed through the juvenile courts and receiving, you know, various opportunities and options depending on what state they live in. Are a lot of these kids receiving mental health assistance or the kind of counseling that would help them see a better future for themselves than the ones that, especially the ones that are not seeing a future for themselves, are currently seeing?
That's an excellent question. More generally, we are now starting to investigate those issues, but you should know that in the overall study, there is a lot of variability about which kids get treatment. And then it's not just about getting treatment, it's about getting the right kinds of treatment in the right dosages for the right periods of time. And there's a lot of variability because these kids are in different kinds of systems, they're in different kinds of programs, they're in different kinds of treatment centers. Some kids get really good treatment, some kids get okay treatment, some kids may be getting the wrong treatment. And I think that that's a larger thing that we have to figure out more generally with respect to to serious adolescent offenders, is trying to match up their needs and their risks to the most appropriate treatment.
You know, thinking about this, I just think kids generally, I've read that brains don't develop until the age of 25. Kids have a hard time envisioning their futures at every level of society. This isn't just kids who are, you know, caught up in the criminal justice system. So how do you change that? How do you change that, especially for folks that have gone down this road?
There's two things here. The first thing is, we have to recognize that a lot of the things kids do are things that kids do, and most kids are going to do things that are not necessarily going to be predictive of a long term of crime. In fact, most adolescents end up committing some sort of crime over their adolescence. This is what they do.
You've been talking to my parents, apparently.
Yeah, that's what kids do. That's what most adults did when they were 14, 15, 16 years old. And so one of the things we have to do is, you know, we have to step back and say, okay, well, how much of this is really serious and how much of this is just kind of transient? And brain development, the cognitive, more long-term thinking part of the brain, it develops later, as I said, in the mid-20s, whereas the more emotional, pleasure now-oriented part of the brain develops very early. So you have this mismatch when you have kids who are 14, 15 years old and they're surrounded by other people who are going through these exact same experiences, they're going to do really dumb things. But the majority of them end up not doing those dumb things by no huge societal intervention. So that the key for us, and that this is the hard part, this is the tough nut to crack, is trying to figure out which of those kids we need to pay a lot more attention to. And that's what a lot of the science is actually trying to do right now.
And once we pay attention to them, what do?
Well, then we have to come up with reasonable intervention strategies, intervention strategies that are cost-effective and that are palpable to all human beings, because not everybody will agree about services and treatment and those kinds of things. But right now, there's a really good experimental evidence-based research that a lot of states and a lot of localities throughout the United States and the world are finding out about what works for kids. Some of those things that do work are expensive. Sometimes it's the way it is.
Be specific. Can I get just a couple of examples?
Sure. Cognitive behavioral therapy is a really good program that works. And basically that whole idea is you're trying to get kids to learn how to make decisions and how to think about the short term and the long term. And you're reorienting them how to weigh those risks and rewards with respect to their behavior. And it's not just behavior in terms of crime, it's behavior in terms of like their diet. You know, I can eat this big piece of cheesecake right now because it'll taste really good. But there's going to be a consequence of that. So it's the 10,000 calories or whatever. So you have to get people to think about the decisions they're making. And once you reorient them to thinking about the long term, that will then adjust the kinds of things they do.
Dr. Alex Baccaro of the University of Texas at Dallas. His research finds that teens who can't envision a future for themselves are more likely to commit more crimes. You're listening to The Record on KUOW.